Welcome to another edition of Interviews with the Masters, brought to you by the OutdoorInsiders.com. And today we're doing a live podcast with a fellow insider, a good friend of mine, and a man that doesn't really need much of an introduction. It's Jared Blumgren. How are you?
Doing well. How are you doing today, John?
I'm good, man. Just trying to get my stuff together. I got a hunt coming up here. I got a late season elk hunt in the first week of November here in Arizona. And it's just been crazy for me because usually I spend a lot of time scouting. I get everything dialed in. I know exactly where I'm going, so on and so forth. But this year, it's like par for the course. Every single hunt I am so unprepared for. I have had no time to get up there. I actually haven't been in this unit in probably, I want to say about five to seven years, easy. So, but yeah, you know, I'm just, I'm excited to get out and hopefully I'll be able to make it happen. But, you know, they're just not like they're talking or anything this time of year or anything. So it's going to be just a glass and, you know, spot and stalk type hunt. And I don't even know where a good place to glass from, to be honest with you. I haven't been in there so long. And the only time I ever hunted it was during the rut. So, you know, I'm just going to have to approach it differently and get out there and, you know, put some miles on the boots. So what do you got?
Well, kind of along the same lines, I have a elk tag left in Montana still, which is
okay.
Montana's kicked my butt this year. You know, archery, opening day of archery, I had an opportunity at a 380 bull that I really screwed up, and I've been trying to play catch-up since, trying to find that same bull and passed on some other decent elk that I maybe shouldn't have. But so now, you know, going into late-season Montana elk hunt, right now I'm not even sure if it's even going to be viable that I get back and go after one. And if I do, it'll be strictly a meat hunt. But, you know, like you say, that late season is a whole different ball game. The elk are obviously not where they were in September. They're not vocal. You know, I have seen, like last year hunting Montana, the bulls are still bugling here and there, but they definitely weren't coming into calls or anything. You know, they're herded up, and it's a tough hunt. Find the feed and find where they're bedding and hope you're in the right spot, I guess.
Okay, so that kind of leads me into what I was going to ask you. What is your, you know, what's your game plan? What do you think you're going to do just to get it started, really?
You know, on that elk hunt, it's going to be, like you said, finding a good vantage point, do some glassing, watching open ridge tops, looking at the south-facing slopes that have more sun, find where they're bedding, find where they're moving. You know, last year there was a bit more snow in some of the areas where I was going. This year there's not, so I think that's going to be a big change.
And, right.
You know, the feed is the big thing, I guess. And then, you know, you got that shoulder season in Montana that I see Colton has commented on here. That's a great opportunity, too, to get out there for a meat hunt and help out some of these landowners and take some of those elk off their land. So it may even get into that later in the year. It's hard telling.
Yeah. See, we're not really going to be dealing with any weather here. And the unit that I'm hunting in 5B. So 5B has the greatest portion of it is a big mesa. It's called Anderson Mesa. It's a giant flat top mesa with very, very few, you know, hills and stuff on it. And then it drops off this mesa, and there's some canyons and whatnot. There's an area called Walnut Canyon and Anderson Canyon. So it's not like we're going to be dealing with snow and elevation and everything. It's kind of right there around 7,000, I think it is, or 6,500 to 7,000. And so it's not like I could even play that game, you know, follow the snow or follow the feed, because it's the same everywhere. It's really going to be, I'm going to be looking for, you know, just to find where they're at, you know, just going to be looking. Finally, when I find where they're at, that's good. Where I'm going to start.
Right.
You know, it's going to be one of those things. It's, I don't have any real intel of where to even go, but I'll figure it out. I might have to do a little road hunting for a day or so, just drive around and cover as much ground as possible, and hopefully come across some elk, and then start my efforts in that area.
Right. Yeah. Now, is your tag strictly a bull tag or?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's bull only, and I believe there's only 25 tags, so it's not like I have a bunch of competition or anything like that. But you know, it should be a good hunt. It should be good. I had this hunt in 2011, but I had it in a different unit called Seven East, and that's a real glassable unit. There's a lot of like areas and burns and whatever that you can glass. So it kind of lends itself to a late season hunt. Plus the weather was perfect that year. It snowed way up high on the mountain and brought all the elk down. And,
right.
But so we'll see what happens. I'm still excited. We're starting to get a couple questions here. So let me, jump off this topic for a second and, let's see what we got. It's such shit.
I see that Shane Edgar, he asked public land mule deer, and then right after that I seen Travis Nowotny join. Shane, maybe you should get some of his sneaky feet that he has.
There you go.
Public land mule deer, that's a whole can of beans there, you know. It, especially if it's a high-pressure area here in South Dakota, and into Montana, you know, some of those general tags or over-the-counter tags, not hard to draw a unit. They hold some good mule deer, but they are hard to find, and then you take the pressure and put on top of it. Obviously, the number one answer is always hunt harder than the guy next to you. Push in farther and get into some of those untouched areas. Look for those bigger bucks that seek out the nasty holes and hang out in them. You know, they'll take and push their does into those areas and live that out. You know, look on a map, find those areas, and generally you might have pretty good luck finding some decent deer in there as well.
Yeah. I mean, as a rule of thumb, deer are going to be where the pressure isn't, you know.
Exactly.
You know, back east, when I hunting whitetail and I applied this year, I used to hunt really close to homes or really close to, like, matter of fact, I used to have this spot that was right where the WMA, the wildlife management area, that we, you know, it's public land access to hunt. All the guys would park in this one little parking lot, and they would, you know, traipse into the woods and do what they had to do, set up stands and whatnot. And I would hunt this little woodlot that was just off the side of the parking lot because all these people go in the woods. That's where the deer would come to. And so it's just thinking outside the box, you know, if there's guys on these ridges here and these ridges there, just kind of, you know, try to get. And you know what? And even sometimes the deer will just hang out. They'll hold tight like whale. They'll just hang out where the people are at. So it all depends. I know it's kind of a vague answer, but, you know, I just say, like you said, hunt harder than the guy next to you. You know, that's the best, the only surefire way of getting it. So, but we got a question from Matt Ament.
Hey, Matt, what's going on? You know,
what's his favorite animal?
That can be a hard one to answer. You know, my favorite animal to hunt is the one I'm hunting at any specific time. So that's not really a good answer, but honestly, if I had to choose...
Jack Harrell. Oops, sorry. We had somebody jump in. Go ahead. Finish your answer, Jared, and then we'll get to this caller.
I would say my favorite animal would have to be, you know, the animals that I'm vocal with, the animals that I interact with, making elk probably my number one choice out there. Very, very closely followed by mule deer. And then, you know, it's from there, it's whitetail, pronghorn, and what have you. But I'd have to put elk on the top. It's an animal you're most vocal with. You interact with them most. They're out there. They're making those amazing sounds, and they're rubbing trees, ripping trees to shreds. But then, you know, very, like I said, very close to those mule deer. Those mule deer are also very special in my heart, too.
Absolutely. All right, let's take this caller. I think I heard it was, is it Zach?
Yeah, sorry about that. It said announce yourself, and I didn't even think that it would cut him off. That was my fault. Sorry about that.
Don't worry, man. It's easier for us to decipher who's calling. So this is Zach Harold. Zach actually has a podcast that called Archery Maniacs, and I was on it a few weeks back. Zach's got a good product going there, and it's a fun listen. So, Zach, you calling for a question? Or you just
Absolutely. So, I this might be one for both of you guys. I'm looking at finding a state or a license that I am able to hunt in December, and I am looking into with my bow. I don't really own a rifle, so I'm looking into hunting elk in December with a bow. And I was just kind of wondering some tips on where I should focus my efforts. I would assume that it might be back to the feed sources at that time, but I'm not really sure because I've never had the opportunity to hunt them in December. So I thought maybe you guys might have some awesome input for me.
I'm going to let you tackle that. I've actually never traveled out of state well, that's not true. I've been in Montana for late season, but most of the time when I travel for elk, it's during the rut. So, but
gotcha.
How's it going, Zach?
Great. How are you?
Good. Hey, when you're talking, I've hunted elk in the late season, obviously, but into December, I've never hunted elk in December. It's always been late November at the latest for me in the Texas.
Okay.
That's been Montana that usually runs up to the end of November. I haven't ventured out of state into anywhere where there's tags available in December. So, maybe somebody will chime in here and say what states have tags open in December. I couldn't say one way or the other.
I think Utah does. Utah actually, last I checked, they offer an over-the-counter archery license for December elk. And I just was kind of looking into it, obviously. It'd be awesome to be able to hunt elk in another state. However, as you guys can both attest, the later you get in the season, it's a whole different animal, not only with their behavior, but with the type of clothing and weather and everything that you're also getting yourself into.
What I've noticed with those late season hunts, being elk, deer, or what have you in December, they're really going to be focusing on, obviously, feed. Coming down after the rut, they're trying to put back on that weight that they need to get them through the winter time. So I always, from mid-November on, I always focus on feed.
Mm-hmm.
Feed
awesome.
Sunny-sided slopes where they're going to be getting more of the warmth. If you can find that feed and find their bedding areas, I've always had good luck in between those two.
I got you. So you kind of set up an ambush, it sounds like.
Yeah, figure out where they're moving and hang there, hunt them like whitetail, if you will. Spot and stalk if you can.
Awesome.
But that's what I would say. That's absolutely how I approach it.
Cool. Thank you very much. That was really helpful. Thank you very much.
My take on it, and this goes for any animal that you're hunting, is you figure out what their needs are for that time of year, and that's where you're going to find them, when you find those things that they need. So obviously when it's really cold, and if you're hunting Utah, I think Colorado is open that time of year also, if you're hunting in December, there's going to be snow. And with a lot of snow, it's hard for them to get to feed, so they're going to migrate down to areas that have, depending on what the terrain is like, willows or whatever, or, it could be, you just got to find out it's a good idea to even call the game warden or the biologist for that area and find out what types of things they are eating on and what type of area they occupy during those times, and then just kind of go from there and just find the best of that. If he's telling you they're in the sage country and blah blah blah, and you look for that best that habitat that has the most of whatever it is that they prefer that time of year.
Perfect. Thank you guys. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You guys check out Zach's podcast. He's like I said, he's doing a great job. He's up and coming. We got some good guests on there. We got a question from Tanner Kemp. Tanner's actually one of my cameramen. He's a good guy. I'm going to let you take that, Jared. It says, when locating mule deer in northern states, what do you look for habitat-wise? So I'm assuming he wants you to answer that, because if he wanted me to answer that, he'd call me on the phone.
Yeah. Now, when you're saying north country, there's a huge difference between what state.
I think he means the northern states, probably, like, well, because he just moved to Idaho. So I'm going to assume, like, Idaho, Montana, you know, eastern
right.
Washington.
But, you know, even with that said, now you're going to be looking at areas of the state. You know, if we're looking at those areas, are you hunting the plains type stuff? Are you hunting the mountainous type stuff? So I'll kind of touch on both, I guess. But
yeah.
Obviously, no matter what you hunt.
Michael Vlahadamas?
We just got somebody jump on. Mike, give us a second. We're answering a question right now, and we'll get to yours.
Okay.
Right,
you know, if you're looking at mountainous area for mule deer versus plain stuff, you know, they're both going to – every animal needs what? Food, water, and security.
Yeah.
So if you're in the mountains, look for that – if it's warmer in the season, look for those areas that are going to offer the shade that they need, or the updrafts and the wind to keep them cool. Look for open basins with good forage on it. Look for those basins that might have a trickle in it, springs, if you will. You know, if you're out in the plains, you still got to look for those fields that have the good forage for them, creek bottoms or draws that have some water in them. Good cut banks that provide shade. You know, those mule deer, they'll bed in cut banks in the shade even when it's 20 degrees out. You find them
right
year round. So it's
and I think that's more for wind, keeping the wind and being able to radiate their heat off of something,
right.
As opposed to trying to, well, that, and of course, you know, it keeps them concealed, but they're not trying to get out of the sun at that point, I don't think. I think my take on it is exactly what I just said to Zach, is you got to figure out what their needs are for that time of year, and you know, it might require you to make a phone call to the biologist to find out what that is for that specific area, because they're going to know better than anybody. And then looking for those microhabitats or those habitats that have all those items in there. So. Mike, what question you got for us, Mike?
Well, what's our top, Eric? And I'm sorry, I'm literally just getting off a job right now, and just had enough time to call in.
We're talking about everything, man. So, and Jared, and well, you know me because I know Mike. he hunts everything. So whatever you got, you want to shoot at him, go ahead. I'm sure he'll be able to whip up an answer for you.
No problem. No problem.
If not, I'm a really good BSer too.
One of my main concerns is that I live in Long Island in New York, and I have ample time during the summer and so forth to scout, mainly whitetail. And the thing is that when the rut hits and you start to get those mature bucks going off of their normal trails, going out of their their forage areas, and mainly their basic routine. How do you approach during that time during the rut, finding out where they're headed and where they're going? Because out here, the population density is enormous.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to tell what specific herds, like these mature deer, are going after. Because the population density is so immense that, I mean, they could be going off of a trail, you know, a mile away. They could be going off a trail, you know, 2 miles away. And And it's hard to gauge where that mature buck that you've been after, that you know his routine, is starting to head off to.
Right. Do you have any idea what the buck to doe ratio is?
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's high.
It's high, but it's also hard to tell because, I mean, like, John was out here 2 weeks ago, and he shot a buck that we were after literally for 4 years that was able to elude us for 4 years, and we knocked him down. John knocked him down, and the very next day, a hunter that we had met in the same area has pictures of a buck that is very, very close and similar to the buck that John shot and John and I were after. So we don't know if this is an offspring of his or so forth, but my point is that it's very hard to tell in this area, is that the buck that I'm after? Because there's so many of them that they're very close and they're very similar in appearance and in interactions and so forth. And out here, like, especially even late in the season, before they break off, these bucks are together. Like, I was at my farm last night where I grow trees, and I still had six bucks that were together, and the rut is coming up in another week or so.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have experience with the area, so let's just give you Mike is actually my wife's cousin, and Mike hunts with me, or I hunt with Mike when I go back east. So I usually don't hunt there during the rut, but I have, and I have in years past growing up. Really, man, it's tough to hunt a specific deer in the rut there. I agree with you, because they don't have the patterns they know, and they can go off wherever they want. But if you just want to kill a good buck, find the does and stick with the does. And you know, as the season gets later and you guys start getting snow and all that stuff, and a lot of those acorns are going away and whatnot, you just go back to where the good feed is, you're going to get on them.
No, I completely understand. But, John and Jared, when you reach a certain point in your hunting and the way you want to hunt, I mean, you're trying to shoot, you're aiming for a certain caliber in yourself and in your animal. So mainly it's you're setting your sights on a goal. So you put your effort into a specific animal and the rut comes about and you want this animal mainly because you want to fulfill your goal of being a specific hunter. Like you're right. After a specific animal and you're trying to gain that satisfaction and that caliber of a hunt in yourself.
You know, if it was me, obviously I would focus on where I can find the most does, but from there I'd break down the area, find the main travel routes that the does are using. If you can, look at those routes, find where you got scrapes, rub lines, start breaking down on, the rubs over here are maybe a little bit more of an aggressive buck, maybe a bigger buck, the way the tree is. Look at lick branches. How high are these bucks licking on the lick branches? How high are their antlers maybe hitting some of those lick branches? You may or may not be able to pinpoint, okay, this might be a bigger buck using this scrape line here. These rubs over here, that same buck might be hitting those. And if you're during the rut, hang a stand and, heck, be patient and hope that one of those bucks is going to be using those. But, you know, otherwise it's just a shot in the dark with that density of deer and what animals are going to be coming by. You got to start
right. I mean, because I'm sure you yourself would be amazed within, okay, you're on a trail, you're on a specific scrape line, and you're tracking this one particular animal, and you're confident that this is his scrape line, this is his area. And you'd be surprised walking another 100 yards, 200 yards, that you come into a completely different buck's area. I mean, that's how densely populated it is. And so that's why it's a little harder to gauge in my specific area.
It's like the lottery. You ain't going to do it if you don't. You're not going to win if you don't buy a tag and your ticket, and you're not going to kill that deer if you're not on one of those scrape lines.
Oh, of course not. I mean, you got to be in it to win it, of course.
Yep. trail cameras, if you can put some trail cameras up to try to pinpoint, that's really about the only way you're going to figure it out.
Nice. Well, Mike, I hope you you tag out and go check out.
I'm hoping so, too, because now that I have these next 3 weeks.
Go check out that new area that I sent you on Google. All right,
exactly.
I might take a couple of these other questions. Thanks for chiming in.
Good luck, Mike.
Thank you, guys. I have to get going back to work, but, Jared, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike.
I got a question. This was a message to me from Mike Chamberlain, actually. And Mike asked, what is your checklist, or what do you do mentally when you're getting to take a shot?
Leading up to the shot, huh?
Yeah.
You know, different situations. I always look down and make sure everything's right with my bow before the shot. I have reference marks on every piece of movable item on my bow that I'm always constantly checking when I'm on the hunt. But right before the shot, I might not have time to look at that. But before I went that morning, I looked at all those reference marks to make sure they're on. Now, leading up to when I'm starting to tighten up that string to loosen an arrow, as I'm knocking that arrow, I make sure all the blades are on my broadhead. I make sure the broadhead's tight. I make sure my knock fits into my groove just right, snaps on my string as needed. If I get a range on the animal, I look at the pin that I need to use and memorize that pin so I don't have to get the full draw and do it over again, even though I'm going to anyway. Make sure my release is where it's supposed to be on my wrist. I use a wrist strap on mine. So, and then coming to full draw, making sure that animal is doing what he needs to be for the shot. Every shot is, obviously, we only loosen an arrow when we know it's going to be an ethical shot. And,
right.
You know, playing everything through in my mind, all while trying to get that shot off before the animal maybe steps out of my lane or moves off or the wind swirls. Focusing on the shot, aim small, miss small is the big saying. But, you know, if you're running through that all those steps as you're making that shot, I find for me, I make the better shot rather than just rushing the shot and making that arrow go off. And, you know, just playing it through in your head, you want to see the end result, focus on that, but don't let it get you too consumed that you forget to take the steps. Which pin, what's the range, anchor point, follow through.
Right. I have a little different, you know, everybody's got to develop their own deal. And basically when I practice shooting, I constantly go through the same thing over and over and over and over. So it becomes second nature. You know, my checklist is more about where my anchor points are, how I'm holding the bow, you know, all that stuff. And it becomes automatic. And one of the things that I've done and I've developed in it, since I've been doing this, like once I determine that that's an animal that I'm going to shoot, I stop looking at its rack. Don't ever look at its head again. I don't get buck fever. I get it after I make the shot. That's when I get the jitters and I get all excited and lose, you know, pee myself. But I don't get buck fever. I don't ever get anxious. I don't ever, oh my God, this is going to happen. Oh my, oh, it's not, you know. I don't look at there. I just focus exactly on the spot that I want to shoot at. And when that spot presents itself, the arrow's going.
You got a new name and there, John.
What's that?
You have a new name, Stone Cold John Stallone.
I guess, huh? But now I kind of made myself really become really automatic. I do a lot of different practices that, like, people would say, oh, you're going to develop target panic and blah, 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 blah. But in my opinion, a lot of times when you're hunting, especially when you're hunting during a rut, and it's like a drive-by shooting, you know, that they're trotting past you or – you know, he's got his nose up a doe's butt or whatever. It's almost, it's like it is target panic already. So it's like, you know, if you don't train yourself to be able to make those, you know, quick split-second decisions and really zone in on what the task at hand is, what you need to do. If you start worrying about, you know, antlers and, oh, am I going to make this shot and da 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 da, you're going to be, I just heard a comment and made me laugh. it's going to hinder your shot. And I know, like, Joel Turner, okay, you know, he talks about when you practice to add all, like, you know, if you're going to stop a deer, for instance, and use, like, a, you know, a little bleat sound or whatever, you know, meh. If you're going to do that, that alters in your head what your shot process is. So I practice all those things. I've been doing that for years. And when I heard Joel say it, I was like, cool, I'm not a freaking idiot. I'm not a, you know, psychotic. I practice with my backpack on. You know, if you practice all the lifelike scenarios, it becomes automatic. And
practice as you shoot.
Yeah, exactly. You know, practice with your broadheads, practice with your gear on, practice ranging. Even though you're sitting on a bag, you know it's 35 yards away, 40 yards away, whatever. That whole motion of you ranging, reconnecting, you know, that all that stuff has a lot to do with how you're going to shoot. So, but what's up, Steven?
As we all know, we don't know what scenario we're going to be in when we're out in the field, but the more we prepare ourselves and put ourselves in those scenarios, the more prepared you're going to be for the time when that shot comes.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to Longbow Dan's questions.
Photography.
Yeah.
One of the things that I take to heart is photography. You know, nothing tells a story more than your pictures and what you collect over the years. I don't take the pictures to show them off to people. I take the pictures to relive the memories in my mind with my family and to talk about them. You know, weekly, I'll sit down with my hunting photos, and my kids love to go through them and say, Daddy, what's this a picture of? Where were you at when you were doing this? Or why did you take this picture? You know, on slow days when I'm hunting, I obviously always have my camera with me. I generally hunt alone for the most part. Until my significant other I'm with now, she loves to hunt as much as I do, so it's awesome. It's been an adjustment for me because I've been a solo hunter most of my life, but it's been working out. But when I'm out, so she is amazing. She takes a lot of photos for me. When it's my hunt, she's taking photos of me. When it's her hunt, I'm taking photos of her. But when I'm by myself, I have that camera, and if I'm sitting and I'm glassing and I see something, oh, you know, that's a cool shot, I'll take a picture. If I'm walking down a trail and I see a cool photo, I take the picture. But I don't distract myself from the hunt by doing too much with my camera. And that's maybe one reason why I've never got into videoing my hunts, and I have the utmost respect for those of you that do video hunt. Hands down to you guys. You guys got a lot of patience in doing that. But I guess maybe the reason I don't, and I get a lot of questions why I don't video, is because I focus more on the hunt and killing the animal. So I try not to do that when I'm taking photos in the field either. There's times, you know, for a story I'm going to write, I might not have the support photos I need, so I will do those after the fact. Or after the animal's dead, I might do those photos to catch up and fill the blanks that I didn't get before. But a lot of my photos are taken when the hunting's slow and I'm having lunch or I'm having a snack or relieving myself or whatever I got to do. I'll pull out the camera and I might take 500 photos and shoot, there might only be 15 money shots out of those 500 photos that are good for storytelling. And, you know, if you're doing it by yourself, you can use a timer, but I find it a lot better to buy that remote control that you can just push the button and the camera goes off in 2 seconds or 10 seconds, whatever you set it to. Good tripod, good camera, remote.
I actually, when I'm taking photos of myself, I use my iPhone for a lot of my infield stuff. And it's crazy because I have the SLRs and all this other stuff. But especially when I'm by myself and I have to pack around gear, I'm using my iPhone. So I'll actually set my phone on video. The video is in 4K. And I go back and I screenshot all the awesome pics, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, especially when I'm taking up. So, for instance, the deer that Mike was just talking about in New York, I was by myself. and all my grip and grin photos, all my hero shots, whatever. I did those all by myself, but I set the phone up, I put it on video, and I got back and I started just manipulating the deer in different ways, and I went back and picked all the shots that I liked the best. We got a question from Stephen Forrest, and he says, my hunt starts on the 4th, so he has the same hunt that I have coming up. With the heat that we are seeing, how much time would you put on water versus spot and stalk? You know what, man, depends on the unit, but I would say water is always good in Arizona.
Absolutely water.
Yeah, there's water, you know, if you got water, typically elk are using it. So, I mean, unless there's like, is it an area where there's literally tanks like that all over the place, then you might be doing yourself a disservice. But if it's an area that has tanks that are, you know, relatively separated by, you know, a good distance, or, you know, they're sparse, I would say for sure that water's a good option. I know a lot of guys that kill in the late season that sit water. So 4B, yeah, 4B, especially if you're hunting off on the low side where it's a little bit more scrub brush and all that stuff, it's really dry over there. I'm going to say, yeah, water's a great option for you. And just go there and scout the tanks, man. If you see a lot of sign on there and it looks fresh, then you know. So, I think I missed a couple questions that came across on my other feed here. And we're going to grab it. But so while I'm looking for this, you have an elk hunt coming up in Montana. What else do you have going on?
I have a mule deer tag in Montana too. We're gonna head up to Montana on November 10th. But I like to spoil myself on Veterans Day and go hunting on Veterans Day. So okay. Heading to Montana the night of the 10th, taking the kids with, taking them on a mule deer hunt. It'll be a rifle hunt. Be in eastern Montana, place I went last year. Passed up half a dozen bucks that were easily in the 170s that I know made it through the season, and from what I can understand, nobody's been hunting there yet this year. So that should be a really good hunt. Really excited for that. And then, of course, my Montana elk tag that we talked about. And then back here in South Dakota, I have two rifle whitetail tags that I'm hoping to fill in November. Sandra, she has two whitetail rifle tags, and then she also was lucky enough to draw a late season December muzzleloader tag that should be an absolute blast.
Awesome. So they got a full late season here. I have this elk hunt, and I canceled a bunch of hunts because I drew an Arizona Desert Chief tag. Well, one of the lucky sons of bitches that got one. That's the whole month of December. After that, I'll probably be chasing muleys and coos deer here in Arizona in January. And then I hope to, in February, I'm supposed to plan an out-of-country trip to go hunt ibex in Spain, but I don't know if that's going to pan out right now. But yeah, so that's pretty much. Oh, I'm actually supposed to go to Mexico too. I haven't 100% secured that, but I'm supposed to go back to Mexico and shoot a coos deer the very last week of January, hopefully with the bow. Not going to take the rifle this year. Other than that, it's been a real slow year for me. Mainly, like I said, I canceled like 3-4 hunts this year because I knew I was going to spend a lot of time for the sheep. For the sheep tag, and I drew some good tags, but I didn't draw as many tags as I usually do. I put in for like 40 hunts a year or something like that, something ridiculous. Spent a ridiculous amount of money on tags and fees and whatnot. Last year I had a stellar year. I drew like, I don't know, like 15 tags or something crazy like that. It was actually Yeah, 15 tags. So, yeah. What do you got? Let's see. Colton asks if you're going to be in Northeast Montana.
Be close to there, yeah.
Okay. We got another one from Longbow Dan. What are your plans to get through the next year without being able to hunt? Oh, that's right, because you're going to be – I'll let you take that. I know what your plans are.
You know, the hardest part, obviously, is not being away from the hunting. It's going to be being away from my kids and my family. But, you know, I'm trying to put plans in place while I'm gone for the next year. I leave July of 17 for just short of a year. So I'm going to miss all the hunting, of course, in the later part of 2017 and the spring of 18. So, you know, there's plans in place. Hopefully I can do a hunt or two while I'm deployed. Of course, being in the military, that's all fluid. You never know what's going to happen. So I can't really 100% plan on actually being able to hunt from the day my boots leave the ground here in the States to the day I get back. You know,
right now, I don't know.
Do I have plans and do I have big wishes of something I can do while I'm there? Yes, but maybe it'll be different kind of hunting that we don't necessarily want to do, but time will tell. See what happens.
Yeah, that's always one of those situations. Anyway, I found one of the other questions I got messaged to me, and I'm having a hard time accessing my, because a lot of them were coming through on Instagram. But I believe I asked you this on our one-on-one podcast that we had a few weeks back, or actually now a couple months back, was what do you attribute your consistent success to?
I know you know the answer.
Yeah.
You know, it's like beating the dead horse, but patience. Patience plus persistence equals opportunity, right?
Yep.
Scouting, the more you can scout, the better prepared you are. The more you prepare for your hunt, the better off your hunt's going to be. That includes scouting, preparing yourself, all of that. You know, it's a full circle. Everything is it's a paradigm shift, if you will, even. Everything kind of fits together in one way, shape, or form, but I always laugh at the guy. I used to work as an archery tech in a shop here, a local shop, and I'd always laugh. Two, 3 days before season, all these guys would bring their bows in and say, hey, season starts in 2 days, and I need to start practicing. Can you check out my bow and make sure everything's okay? And they never liked my answer when I said, dude, season starts in however many days and you haven't practiced yet, you're already behind the eight ball. You're already setting yourself up for failure.
Exactly.
You know, it's a year-round deal. A lot of us know that. And if it's not a year-round deal for you now, it needs to be. The more you prepare yourself, the better off you're going to be. So I kind of got way blown out on that answer. It's not just one pointed thing. It's everything
right.
that goes into it. If you're doing all that and you have the patience to go along with it, you have the fortitude to keep getting out there and persevering through it, no matter how much you're getting your ass kicked,
right.
you're going to come out on top. I've been getting my ass kicked big time this year on Montana elk, and
mm-hmm.
it's the first time it's happened to me. It's a hard thing to swallow, but I'm hoping eventually persistence and patience will give me that opportunity. The only thing is I don't know if the time is going to be there to allow it this year. So.
Right. I actually had to burn my Montana tag. I was supposed to go, and for whatever reason, a couple of things happened, and I couldn't go. But anyway, my answer to that is kind of where you were alluding to, is it's in the details. All the guys that are consistently successful hunters and do it year in, year out, have a high success rate, it's all about the details. The details on how you practice, the details on how you scout, how you prepare, what you bring with you. I mean, everything, all the guys that are like this, I mean, if you would see what they're what's going on in their brain when they're looking at it's about details, details, details. You walk through the woods, you pick up the little minor things, like the, it's being focused and just taking all this information and putting it all together, and that's what makes success. And I think that goes for anything in life. I mean, if you're a very detail-oriented person, you can think of all the different scenarios, you know, and be very foresighted and look, you know, way in the future and try to, you know, come up with, again, all these different types of things that you could be or scenarios that you can be faced with, and you prepare for those, you're gonna be a successful owner. So you're gonna be successful in life.
So. Absolutely.
But yeah, I couldn't find it. I don't know what the heck I did with it, but I thought it was maybe on my not there. What do you prefer to hunt with the bow or with the rifle? Or do you not care?
You know, it's I prefer to hunt with bow. And you know, I use a multitude of weapons for the simple fact that it creates more opportunity for me to get out
exactly.
there and hunt.
Exactly.
You know, primarily I'm an archer. And even when I'm out there with my rifle, I'm trying to get as close as I can. And there's times where I wish I wouldn't have had my bow with, or wouldn't have had my rifle with, because I was mm-hmm. in bow range to kill some of those animals. But, you know, primarily being an archer, closer the better. Getting one with that animal and, be, you know, getting to know them, and it's a much more personal level.
Yeah. Have you considered picking up the struggle stick, trying to go traditional archery?
No, you know, I get guys all quite a bit asking me, you know, okay, you've done it with compound, time to switch and be more primitive. But, you know, I enjoy what I'm doing. I don't feel like I have anything to prove. I don't feel like I need to go to a recurve or a longbow by any means. You know, I am who I am, and I'll just keep doing what I'm doing and not worry about what other people think.
Absolutely. I've been dabbling in a little bit, and it's not because I feel like I gotta challenge myself anymore or anything, but I've always had this, romantic relationship with longbows and recurves. Like I'm drawn to them. I own a bunch of them. I build them. I mean, I make them. I love working with wood, but there's something about that being able to make your own, you know, your own weapon and then going to use it. But every time I go to pick up the damn thing to go take it out in the woods to try to shoot something with it, I talk myself out of it. But eventually, I think I'm not going to abandon the compound. I'm not going to be like I'm a trad guy now. But I love my compound bow, but. Like I said, I had this draw that I want to do it with a longbow. I want to be able to, you know, take something from a piece of wood, turn it into a weapon, and put meat on my table. I'm going to do it. I was going to do it this year, and I probably would have made it happen because I shot that buck that I plan on, the hunt that I plan on taking, I shot that buck at 17 yards. And inside 25, I'm usually very, very good with a traditional archery. So, but anyway, yeah, it's not because I feel like I got to challenge myself or prove to anybody else that I'm a badass hunter. But anyway, yeah, man, I think that's all I got for you because technology's not working with me and I can't seem to, I got like four different screens going on here, so that's why you see me moving all over the place. I can't seem to pull up my Instagram feed and I can't remember exactly what it was, but you know, thanks for coming on. Thanks for sharing and all the listeners out there and the guys that are asking questions and stuff. Thank you for being part of the guys that called in. That was super
awesome. Yeah, thanks, everybody.
Yeah, seriously. Nothing worse than being up here talking to yourself, you know? hearing yourself talk and nobody else wanted to listen. We appreciate you guys. This is why we do what we do. We don't hunt because of you, but this is why we produce content. People ask me all the time about that. And I said, I make videos, because I want to be able to share them with my children and whatever.
Absolutely.
And I want to be able to reflect back on. But I also enjoy producing content for all the, all the guys out there that follow me. It's part of what drives me, and why I keep doing, keep doing what I do. That's why I produce this podcast, because let's face it, I'm not making $1 million off of it. So, Stephen Farr said, thank you for your service. I don't know if you saw that. And Longbow Dan, yes, I am. And you make it one. It's a struggle stick for me because I don't have the time to practice with it. And if I did, I'd probably be pretty good, I would imagine, just because I am a detail-oriented person and like Jared said, persistence and patience. I'm a persistent guy. I don't know, I'm not very patient, but anyway, that's all I got for you. Any final words of wisdom or anything you want to pass along?
Not really. I appreciate being on here, John. It's always some good stuff that we always talk about. So, everybody that's listening or has listened, keep at it. Keep chasing your dreams. Only you can make them come alive.
Absolutely. Good luck on your upcoming hunts, man, and hopefully your girl will be able to knock down those deer on those great hunts you got. And
Sounds good.
I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Good luck to you as well, buddy.